Memoirs of Charles James Yellowplush, sometime footman in many genteel families. Chapter 5, My Debut in Society. In a previous chapter, I described how I earned a substantial sum from my novel, The Besmirched Escutcheon, which I duly invested. However, I deemed it politic to leave the service of the Duke of Diddlesex, whose family I had depicted all too vividly in my book. And so, I accepted a post as head footman in the household of Sir George Flimsy, a banker in the city with the house of Flimsy, Diddler and Flash. The next stage in my tale can best be explained by recounting a conversation I had one morning with Sir George over breakfast, after I'd been in his service some while.
May I offer you some more kedgeree, Sir George?
No, thank you, Charles. I've had sufficient.
Then I wondered if I might have a word with you, Sir George, before you depart for the city.
Certainly, but I've only a limited amount of time.
I appreciate that, Sir George, but I've received some news from my bankers, Greedy and Sharp.
Greedy and Sharp, but
They're a reputable firm, aren't they, Sir George?
Yes, of course. But you're saying they're your bankers?
Indeed. And they tell me that my holdings with them are now worth £30,000.
£30,000? But I'm only paying you 20 guineas a year. How could you possibly have that sort of money?
Well, it's a long story, Sir George.
I'd imagine it is.
You see, I started out with a small windfall, and ever since I've been following the financial papers and my own instincts.
But you have no financial background, no insider knowledge, no...
Well, possibly not, but I drew my inspiration from the example set by some of my previous employers, all of whom were betting gentlemen.
But investment is not the same thing as gambling, Charles.
Well, maybe not, but there are considerable similarities. A certain recklessness and a certain coolness of nerve are required. Anyway, I've recently been speculating in the rising interest in investment in foreign loans.
You're onto that?
Oh, yes, Sir George. And so, with due respect, I think I would like to retire from service as soon as you can find an appropriate replacement.
£30,000, you said?
Yes, Sir George.
Sit down, Charles, and have some kedgeree. I am sure the House of Flimsy, Diddler and Flash will be happy to be of service to you in any way it can. My daughters, as you may have noticed, are also very attractive girls.
So now you understand that I am about to describe the momentous chapter of my life in which I left servitude and became a man of substance. There was only one slight cloud in the azure sky shining above me. Marianne.
Hello, Charles.
Hello, Marianne.
I heard your wonderful news.
Marianne remained in the service of the Duke of Diddlesex, but we still met up occasionally. In retrospect, our ensuing interview was not perhaps my finest hour.
You've left the service of Sir George, I hear.
Yes, I'm moving into a first floor apartment in the Albany. The dining room furniture is all oak, British oak.
I'm sure it's very grand.
There's a round, expanding table. Works like a trick in a pantomime. It opens out so that it can accommodate any number from 8 to 24.
24 is quite a big supper party.
Well, not if you compare it with the Duke's. I don't want to get ideas too far above my station.
That's wise.
And the carpet is Axminster, embroidered with tulips. And the chairs are covered in yellow satin. I've taken advice on all of this.
Sure, it looks very splendid.
Yeah.
I don't suppose your old friends will fit into your new life very well. All the same, I wanted to tell you that I'm leaving the Duke's service.
Oh, wherever you go to work, I shall always remember you with affection, Marianne. And I've bought you some flowers.
Oh, Charles, they're beautiful.
It's just to show I've not forgotten how you helped me. But...
this is goodbye, Charles. I understand. A whole fashionable world awaits you.
It's what I've always dreamed of. I always thought that given the chance, I'd be a better gentleman than most of the masters I've served. And I need to do it on my own.
I'll always think of you as you were in your yellow plush coat, Charles.
But where I'm going, fortunately, the people I meet won't. My Albany apartment was soon completely and chastely furnished in the height of Bon Goût. The bedroom was the gem, the bed white and gold, with curtains of pink and silver brocade held up atop by a gold cupid who was always smiling angelically down at me. I changed my name to De La Plouche, as more appropriate to my new status. And I acquired a manservant of my own.
Now, remind me, what's your name?
I'm a Charles, sir.
Oh, no, that won't do at all. You'll have to be a James. Is that clear, James?
Very clear, Mr. De La Plouche. James I am. I'll make sure everyone knows.
I don't want to give the impression that my new life was entirely a life of pleasure. For example, I had to attend the opera, because that is what fashionable folk do. It was a bitter ordeal, but I strove valiantly to hide my yawns. Because of my perceived financial expertise, I was also required to sit on the board of a number of companies where I gained useful information for subsequent speculation. To be honest, I often understood very little of what was said, but because I said little myself, I was regarded as a very sly and knowledgeable cove. It's a habit I learned from the Honourable Mr. Deuceace, one of the greatest rogues unhung. On the other hand, I enjoyed riding my bay horse, Desperation, in the park. Though sometimes, Desperation had a habit of running away with me.
Whoa there, boy! Whoa! Desperation! Whoa! Can you hear me? Whoa, boy!
Oh! Can I be of assistance?
No, I'm fine.
Dear me! You nearly fell off then! The horse is a little frisky!
Yeah. He's not normally like this.
I can see he's a good horse. He just needs a firm hand. What's his name?
Desperation.
Whoa, boy. Whoa there, Desperation.
And the moment the fair damsel spoke, Desperation slowed down. And believe me, she was a fair damsel.
Oh, thank you, Mom. Thank you.
My pleasure. We couldn't have you falling off now, could we?
Mom, may I...
But the lovely creature, clearly of aristocratic blood, galloped off without another word. She had calmed my steed, but at the same time, agitated my heart.
You make a bow. The lady makes a curtsy.
I also enjoyed my dancing lessons. From 6 to 9, we had waltzes and polkas. And then at 9, we did deportment. How to bow, how to enter a room, how to leave a room, and how to congratulate your host and hostess.
Your Grace, I'm honoured, truly honoured. I am delighted to make your acquaintance. But what inclement weather for the time of year, don't you think?
It can therefore be imagined with what high expectation I made my entree at the first ball since my elevation to the moneyed classes. I was the cynosure of all eyes. Sir George Flimsy was there, waiting to pounce with his 3 great ugly daughters in tow. But I went straight over to my excellent friend, John George Godfrey de Bullion Thistlewood, Earl of Bearacres, who I'd had the privilege of encountering asleep at many a boardroom meeting.
Ah, there you are, De La Plouche. Looking remarkably elegant, if I may say so.
Thank you, my lord. I fancy my toilette is sufficiently comme il faut for such a glittering gathering.
Indeed, De La Plouche. Now, I don't believe you've met my daughter, Lady Angelina Thistlewood.
Oh, I don't believe I have, Lady Angelina.
The Lady Angelina was none other than the fair damsel from the park.
So, we meet again, Mr. De La Plouche.
Well, the pleasure is all mine, Lady Angelina.
So, you've met before?
Yes, Father, in the park. I was able to give Mr. De La Plouche some assistance in handling his horse.
Which has behaved like an angel ever since.
Well, if you've met before, I shall leave you to get better acquainted.
As a matter of fact, I have often heard of you from another source as well.
Oh. Who has mentioned my insignificant existence to the fair Lady Angelina?
A very old friend of yours.
And who might that be, if I can be so bold?
Marianne Hoggins.
Marianne? But how?
She's my maid now, and quite the best I've ever had. I fear you have not treated her well, Mr. De La Plouche.
Well, I gave her flowers upon parting. We now move very much in different spheres of life.
But I trust I may give her your best wishes?
Yes, of course. But it is with you, Lady Angelina, that I wish to pursue the acquaintance. Ever since I first saw you in the park, you have haunted my dreams.
I do hope I'm not interrupting.
Not at all, Captain.
The gentleman who had intruded himself upon our intimate tete-a-tete was whiskered and uniformed.
Mr. Delapluche, may I present Captain George Silvertop?
Oh, I'm pleased to make your acquaintance, Captain.
And are yours? You're the fellow who just got rich quick, aren't you?
I am indeed, but a recent entrant into these august circles.
Wish I had just a fraction of your wealth. Solve all my problems. Still, delightful to meet you. Lady Angelina, I wonder if I might have the pleasure of the next waltz.
But of course, I should be delighted. Will you excuse us, Mr. Delapluche?
Well, as a matter of fact, I was on the point of asking...
Oh, no doubt there'll be another occasion. In the meantime, I shall send your best wishes to dear Marianne. Captain.
Lady Angelina.
I watched Lady Angelina as she glided round the gilded ballroom. She was a vision of aristocratic loveliness, and I realised that it was my greatest wish to have her as my bride. But I was not such a fool as not to know that a great deal of wooing needed to be done first. I had read many books upon the etiquette of romance, and I knew that one of my first acts must be to write a poem to Lady Angelina, get it published anonymously in a literary journal, and then make sure she found out it was I who had penned the effusion in question. But despite my skills as a novelist, the creation of an ode did not come that easily.
Around me they flatter and fawn, the young and the old, the fairest are ready to pawn their hearts for my gold.
In this, I was referring to the Mrs. Flimsy, who, though hardly the fairest, seemed all too ready to pawn their hearts.
They sue me. I laugh as I spurn the slaves at my knee. But in faith and in fondness I turn unto thee, unto thee.
I fancy whatever else may have been at fault in my verses, that final repetition had the quality which made Lord Byron so admired of the ladies. With the superscription to Lady A.T., it duly appeared in the Season's Poetical Gems, Volume 13. Strangely enough, despite my broadest hints, Lady Angelina never gave any sign that she had ever read it. But fortunately, I had other occasion to be near the delectable Angelina, because her father, the Earl, invited me down to Bear Acres Castle. Now, it was common knowledge that the Earl and his estate were mortgaged to the hilt, and I was fly enough to know that it was my money he was interested in, not my fine features. But if his interest allowed me to be near his beautiful daughter, who was I to say no? I was invited to join a shooting party. Unfortunately, the impecunious Captain Silvertop was also invited.
Well done there, Delapluche.
Thank you, Captain.
I congratulate you on your impressive aim. I'd rather fancied you were a novice.
Well, I've had a little experience. In fact, I've been taking lessons and it's been
going... I'm sure you have. There's only one problem, old fellow. You're supposed to shoot at the pheasant. That was a cow you've just hit.
Despite the captain's boorish behaviour, I was an honoured guest of the Earl, and the Earl was charm itself for the reasons I have already suggested. And to sugarcoat our friendship, I entered into negotiations to purchase from him a small piece of land of about 100 acres called Squallop Hill.
Of course, the thing about Squallop Hill is that it is particularly advantageous for the breeding of sheep.
Indeed.
Mm. It's something to do with the thistles that grow there. It gives the meat a remarkably fine flavour.
Is that so?
Oh, yes. There's nothing like Squallop Hill now. Now, of course, the principal pleasure of your purchase is that I shall have you as a close neighbour.
Of course. As a matter of fact, not being a fool, I knew I was paying far more for this land than it was worth, 50 times or more. Indeed, this was not the first time I had sent money the way of the Earl of Bear Acres under various plausible circumstances of his making. But it was all part of my master plan to be close to the Lady Angelina. Sadly, I found few opportunities to see her alone.
but I did encounter someone else alone.
Oh, goodness, I'm so sorry. Oh, it's such a shock to see you, even though I knew you were here.
I'm sorry if I startled you. Here, let me help you pick up the pieces. You're looking very well, Marianne. And may I say, rather elegant.
Oh, it's one of Lady Angelina's old gowns. She gave it to me. She's a very generous mistress.
Mm. So you're happy here?
Yes, but...
But?
And you're looking quite a gentleman. Not sure I would have recognised you in all your finery.
No, I have a position in life to maintain, Marianne.
Of course. James was saying...
Well, which James would that be, Marianne?
Why, you're James, Charles. I mean, sir.
Oh, you may still call me Charles, if you wish.
That's very kind of you, sir. Charles.
So, what exactly does my James have to say for himself?
Oh, he's told me all about the life you lead. The operas, the dinners, the riding. He's a very agreeable young man, is James, and most attentive.
I trust he's not paying you unwanted attentions, Marianne.
Oh, no. He's not doing anything unwanted.
I see. Well, be careful, Marianne. You know what a young footman can be like.
I can remember what you were like. There, I think that's all the pieces. Thank you for your help, sir. Charles, I should be going. Lady Angelina will be wondering where I am.
I would not be human if I did not admit to a certain frisson of regret as she walked away. But my heart was fixed elsewhere. And the next day, I took the momentous step of talking to her father.
My dear Mr. Delaplouge, you have my warmest wishes and, of course, my approval to proceed.
Thank you, Your Grace. I'm honoured.
But a word of advice. You must break the matter gently to her, because I'm not quite certain about Lady Angelina's feelings.
What do you mean, Your Grace?
Well, girls are wild and romantic. They do not see the necessity of prudent establishments. And I have never yet been able to make Angelina understand the embarrassments of her family, over which you have so generously assisted us.
Well, it's been my honour, Your Grace.
You are a noble fellow, Mr. Delaplouge, and of course I will ensure she is acquainted with the sacrifices you have made. All I am saying is that young women prate about love and a cottage and despise advantages which wiser heads than theirs know how to estimate.
I hope you're not implying that my proposal would be unwelcome.
No, of course not. You have already pleased her. Your admirable manners must succeed in captivating her, and a fond father's wishes will be crowned on the day in which you enter our family.
Well, you can't say fairer than that, can you? I went in search of the Lady Angelina and found her laughing with the odious Captain Silvertop. When he saw me approaching, he gave a sweeping bow, which might have been interpreted as ironic.
Ah, here is Mr. Delaplouche. Lady Angelina, I leave you to the pleasure of his company. I think he may have something of import to convey. Good morning.
Lady Angelina,
Mr. Delaplouche, I know what you're going to ask me, so may I first ask you something?
Yeah, of course, my lady.
Are you sure that it's not Mary Ann Hoggins you want to marry?
My lady?
You adored her once, and now you seem to get jealous when your man James pays court to her.
My lady, he is not worthy of her.
But then she is apparently not worthy of you.
My lady, the circumstances is changed between me and her. You know I aspire higher. May I be allowed to hope?
Mr. Delaplouche, I know you are my father's financial saviour, and for that I'm very grateful.
Does that mean yes, Lady Angelina?
I think it does.
Oh, my own! The next day, a certain fashionable gazette announced...
Marriage in high life. We hear that a matrimonial union is on the tapis between a gentleman who has made a colossal fortune from investment in foreign loans and the daughter of a noble earl whose name begins with the second letter of the alphabet. An early day is fixed for this interesting event.
Well, then came the wedding arrangements, which are, as you all know, a matter of considerable import and great expense.
the Earl kindly presented me with a picture of Angelina, for which, of course, I paid. She was painted playing a guitar, although I had never seen her within 100 miles of such an instrument. But then, such are the conventions of noble life.
Accessorized with silver.
They look ideal.
A greater gathering of jewellers, lace makers, coach builders, upholsterers and wedding cake manufacturers you never saw in all your life. But what did I care whether the wedding cake weighed half a ton or whether Angelina's uncle, the Right Reverend Lord Bishop of Bullocksmithy, would be able to celebrate our union? For all I thought of was that I was marrying the beautiful Lady Angelina Thistlewood. In retrospect, I think I may have gone a little mad at this point in my life.
Will that do, sir?
Oh, no. Brush them some more.
It was the night before the wedding, and I was inspecting my ensemble for the auspicious day.
I still can't decide, James. Which waistcoat is it to be? The blush white satin and gold, or the canary-coloured watered silk embroidered in silver?
It's a problem, sir.
It is indeed, James. As you would understand if you were moving among the bon ton.
Which, of course, I'm not.
Which reminds me, are you still paying your attentions to Mary Ann Hoggins?
Yes, sir, but sadly with little success. Her mind seems stricken with a great sorrow. So I'll have to wait till she gets over it.
Well, make sure you always treat her with respect, James, or you'll have me to answer to.
Oh, I take my cue from you, sir, in that as in everything.
Yeah, just keep brushing the coat, James.
My sleep was feverish, as most men's is when they're going to be married or hanged. I kept on running through the arrangements in my head, but somehow what kept me awake was the question of the two waistcoats. Yellow, blush white and silver waistcoats swam before my eyes in endless giddying combinations. But at some point I must have dozed off, for I was awoken by an urgent knocking outside.
Marianne!
I'm so sorry to intrude so early, Sharp, but sir, but I'm the bearer of a letter.
A letter from whom?
Lady Angelina.
James, leave us at once.
Very well, sir.
Now, let's see what my bride has to say. Perhaps she has some final advice on my choice of attire.
I think it might be better if you sit down.
Oh, no. Read me what she's written.
I had all along hoped that you would have relinquished pretensions which you must have seen were disagreeable to me. I hope to have spared us all the painful necessity of the step which I am compelled to take. I have begged my father in vain to spare me. I cannot undergo the shame and misery of a union with you.
Oh!
I did tell you to sit down, Charles. Sorry, sir. There's more. By the time you receive this,
I shall be united to the person to whom, as you must have been aware, my heart was given long ago.
Does she mean Captain Silvertop, Marianne?
She does.
Why am I not surprised?
My parents are already informed
of the step I have taken, and I hope in time they will forgive me. So I hope will you. I leave Mary Ann behind me to console you. She admires you as you deserve to be admired, and with a constancy I entreat you to try and imitate. I am sorry it has come to this, but I have no choice but to follow.
Did you know anything of this, Mary Ann?
She told me last night. But please believe me, I had no idea she would say those things about me. They're best ignored.
For the moment, yes. I must find out what's really happened.
Oh, my boy, I'm so sorry.
Sorry because the sale of Squallop Hill has fallen through?
That is not a gentlemanly thing to say.
Yeah, well, maybe I'm not that much of a gentleman.
We did try to dissuade her.
Obviously not hard enough. So where have they gone to?
This item explains it all.
Elopement in High Life. The Authentic Account. Part 4. The mystery is at last solved. This afternoon at 4 o'clock, the hymeneal blacksmith of Gretna Green celebrated the marriage between George Granby Silvertop Esquire, a captain in the 15th Hussars, and the Lady Angelina Amelia Arethusa Anaconda Antoinetta Thistlewood, daughter of the Earl of Bearacres. After the ceremony, the young couple partook of a slight refreshment of sherry and water. The bride...
My dear boy, I'm so sorry.
You've already said that.
No
sooner was the news out than I was besieged by all the aforementioned jewellers, lace makers, coach builders, upholsterers and wedding cake manufacturers, all demanding payment. What else, I thought, could possibly go wrong?
Excuse me, sir, but this has just been delivered.
Oh, why, it's from my bankers, Greedy and Sharp. I wonder what they can have to say to me. My dear Mr. De La Plouche, we have to inform you that... Of course, you remember the great crash of 1825, when the market in investment in foreign loans, which had been stretched beyond endurance, collapsed. A great many people were ruined, including my humble self. By the time the creditors had finished with me, there was not a scrap of meat left on the poor bones of my once wealthy self.
Charles, aren't you finished yet?
Nearly, my dear. Nearly. My life was in ruins. No longer De La Plouche, I reverted to Yellow Plush. My former aristocratic friends shunned me. My former fellow servants rejoiced at my being brought low. Only one person stood by me, and her name may be guessed.
I hope you're going to get a happy ending.
The best of all happy endings. All the same, circumstances would have been hard for us if Lady Angelina had not turned out to be more of a trump than might be expected. She gave Marianne £500 on being told that she was planning to get married, in acknowledgement of her faithful service. And she made us a handsome wedding present out of her modest estate, the lease, goodwill and fixtures of the Wheel of Fortune public house near Shepherd's Market.
Nearly opening time, Charles.
Nearly finished, Marianne. This was a house doing a very genteel and profitable line of business and greatly frequented by all the nobility's footmen.
I'm opening the door now, Charles. Here they come.
Good evening, Charles.
Hello, Charles.
Good evening, James.
How are you doing? All right.
Evening, Charles.
Hello, Charles.
Good evening, James. And so end good the evening, memoirs Charles. Of Charles, hello, Charles James Yellowplush, sometime footman in many genteel families.
The Yellowplush Papers by William Makepeace Thackeray was adapted for radio by Stephen Wyatt. Charles Yellowplush was played by Adam Buxton. Mary Ann was Annabel Dowler, and Bear Acres was Stephen Critchlow. Angelina was Janice Aqua, Silvertop in Our Mirza, James Gunnar Cawthrey, and Flimsy Paul Ryder. The director was Jessica Drumgoole.